Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Howard Feldman. We're talking fashion, and I was saying a little bit earlier, I'm just amazed. Men wearing lycra without anything over it, not okay. Women wearing nappy pants, never okay. Mullets, no matter what you tell me, you will not convince me. But yet, we follow these trends. We seem to do that. Bronwyn Williams, a futurist, economist, business trends analyst, a very good morning. Thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me on. I'm great in yourself.
So hold on. Before we even go there, what is your biggest fashion faux pas? Everybody's got one.
Mine?
Yeah.
Oh, I only wear black, so I could be accused of being boring, right? It's a safe sort of problem to have, I suppose.
And why do you do that? Is that something that just evolved, or does it make it simpler every day to make choices?
Yeah, it's like having a uniform, but a bit more exciting than the Steve Jobs, Elizabeth Holmes uniform, right? You can wear black in different shapes, but yes, it solves the equation quite a lot. Saves a lot of time.
Right, I would imagine so. But we are very heavily influenced by everything around us, by people around us, by social media. How does that work?
Oh yeah, I mean we're very sort of, as they call it, mimetic creatures, us human beings. Mm-hmm. We want what other people want, right? So we want not necessarily the clothes that they're wearing, but we want the lifestyle of the sort of people we see wearing certain objects. And maybe we don't get to live in their mansion if they are that rich, and we maybe don't get to have their multi-platinum award-winning records, but we can at least dress to look like that sort of a person in some way, right? So we try and emulate the people whose lives we want to aspire to have. And that's what we do. We try and aspire to success. So when it comes to the younger generations and where they are looking for inspiration and for idols and for people to essentially be a little bit envious of, we look for people who are succeeding at drawing attention across social media platforms. We want to be a bit more like them. We want to dress like them. And quite often they're quite ordinary people as opposed to the celebrities we used to have back in the day when celebrities still had a bit of mystery around it. Now celebrities are sort of homemade, right? There's still only as few of them as there were before, but they're more homemade. So those looks become more accessible and get disseminated through society really, really quickly. And the other thing is, of course, that brands, thanks to the fact that all these things are playing out now in the digital space, not just in the physical space, don't have those sorts of lead times. So we get plunged straight into the fast fashion cycles where a popular TikTok spawns a sort of a fad for a particular color, a particular shirt, and suddenly every single online store and all those fast fashion chains have it in their stores and it's gone again within 3 weeks, right? So the sort of the cycles become so, so fast. Also really interesting, there's not just one look that's trending at the moment. There's loads and loads, right? There's multiple myriad fashions all trending at the same time. There's enough space for all of them because there's so many of us here on this planet.
And we all have access to it. It's interesting. I remember reading somewhere that because most people, for example, don't have financial access to a brand like Gucci or some of the more expensive luxury brands, that's why they came out with the perfumes and the aftershaves, because it gave people a way to access those brands, feel like they're part of it.
A whiff of those brands.
Exactly. Nicely put. Look, we love a terrible pun here on the show, so that's fine. But it gives people almost access to it. So maybe you can't afford the handbag or the shoes or the belt, but the perfume, 50 mils, you probably can afford. So it gives you a sense of getting close to that aspirational brand that you couldn't ordinarily get to.
Yeah, and there's so many other ways that have also been facilitated through digital technology to give you that little taste of the luxury lifestyle without actually having it, including things like the rent the runway type businesses and the fashion sharing. So you might not be able to afford a whole Prada bag, but you can afford to rent it every third Tuesday, right?
Wow,
the shared pool. So like timeshare and luxury goods, which is incredible. The other sort of slightly darker ones are the rise of the buy now, pay later services, which I'm sure you would have seen all over South African retail e-commerce sites. You can like split your freaking your bargain basement chain store clothing purchase or 250 Rand shirt across 4 to 6 months with those sort of buy now, pay later services. And they claim they're interest free, which is technically true, but they do charge you huge fees if you miss a payment. So you end up paying more. You know, it's not like it's free. None of this is free here. Mm. And that's sort of the sort of debt treadmills that get people into, like, just try it now. Just have live the lifestyle now. Be part of the trending moment right now. We facilitate all of that. So there's a demand. We facilitate it on the commercial side and on the branding side, which is really quite interesting. Also, similar to that, which I also find quite fascinating, is that brands have started to notice that people are wanting to do the rent the runway type thing, or the front seat ownership or shared ownership of their goods, even for lower priced products, but in a more sort of sneaky way. So people would like purchase a garment they can't really afford online. They'd take it home and then they'd like wear it on their social media feeds, take their few sort of lifestyle pictures and get the kudos and the fame and the status points among their communities for wearing this item, and then return it to the stores. Wow. So what stores have started doing now is, instead of just putting those like security tags on, you know, when you leave the store and you're trying to steal a garment, you take it off, you get ink all over it. Now they've got a new thing to try and stop people getting the benefits of wearing their clothes without actually purchasing them. They put these big, ugly, like cotton tags that go like all the way around the dress. If you can imagine a strip of fabric that goes through the neck of the garment, all the way down to the bottom and then all the way around the top again. So it spoils any photos you can wear. You can still try it on, you know, if you're a legitimate purchaser, but in order to actually wear it, you have to cut this thread off or you look ridiculous. You're wearing like essentially like a piece of security tape across your garment. So that's how they're trying to stop people fame stealing and kudos stealing in the social media age, right? I mean, it's there's just ripple effects everywhere you look.
That is fascinating. How much does the economy, the experiences that we have, influence fashion trends? In other words, coming out of COVID, or during COVID, in fact, we saw there was this huge trend towards comfortable clothing because people were working at home, and why get all dressed up? Do we see, I mean, but that's obviously an extreme example when the whole world is kind of going into one place. But do we see recessions? Do we see war? Do we see these types of things influencing the trends?
Oh, absolutely. The economy and politics has always been a key driver and being driven by, actually, if you look at it from a more sort of socio-cultural perspective, by fashion trends, right? Fashion is a sense of personal expression, and we do use it often as a form to sort of resist against authority figures. I mean, we knew this in the 1980s with like the Generation X and the whole like punk movement and the dressing down the deliberately Doc Martens, in order to sort of put the finger to the man. You know, exactly. There was a whole sort of thing that went with it. But we do tend to see those sorts of things come and go too in times of like exuberance, when people are, we have the sort of bubble and hype cycles of our economies, the skirts get shorter, right? People become less conservative and vice versa. In times where the tighter fashions become a bit more conservative to sort of match our mood and our budgets, I suppose. You know, these things do go in waves, and they're quite subtle, but they still do play out. Many of these trends are quite cyclical, and they have longevity through the generations. But a lot of this whole sort of thing of clothing being something as of a protest against systems that you resist against is something that we've been tracking quite closely, particularly as we're starting to see very interesting intersections between pop culture trends and political trends, and the rise of the K-pop fan groups, how they got involved in American politics was a key indicator of that. And of course, fan groups around certain sort of, you know, pop culture bands, so just or explain artists that, or acts.
Explain that point a little bit more, how they got involved.
Yeah, sure. I'll unpack that. So K-pop is obviously Korean pop, or basically sort of like a very Asian boy bands, girl bands, all that sort of thing. And they've become very, very popular within Western societies too, actually quite across the world. They've become a phenomenal cultural export from Korea to the rest of the world. And what we found is that their fan groups are not just sort of meeting in fan clubs or having fan letters like they did in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They're finding themselves online, right? They communicate with each other around posts or on TikTok or on Snapchat or on Instagram or wherever they happen to be in the world, whatever is the popular platform there. And they form communities there, and they have conversations that are wider ranging than just the band. So these groups do form an aesthetic, like a fashion aesthetic too, that dictates, that says that if I dress like this, I'm clearly a fan of this band. So there's a fashion element too. But they also then start to coalesce around political views. And the sort of breakout bellwether case study there was what happened with the run-up to the Trump re-election cycle, the one that he lost to Biden. And what happened was that these K-pop fan groups were organizing in the comments of their bans sort of banned messaging, you know, like on the posts that the bans have put out across social media platforms. And they organized to essentially mess with the Trump campaign by booking out an entire stadium at one of his stops on his rally, but not intending to go, so that the rally couldn't allocate those seats to other people, which might be seen as quite a superficial protest, but it was a really clear case study that the intersection of fashion and politics and pop culture are much messier than we might tend to think. And that's, you know, there's the whole sort of like identifying with a tribe goes really, really deep.
Because we all really want to belong, and I guess that is why we do half of what we do in terms, and why we wear half of what we wear. Very, very interesting conversation indeed. Bronwyn Williams, futurist, economist, business trends analyst and partner at Flux Trends, talking to us this morning about the influence of social media and everything else on our dress sense.